Okay, welcome everyone on this nice evening. I'm Carla Brennan, one of the primary teachers here. And actually the name of my talk tonight is The Nature of Practice and the Practice of Nature. You know, as one of the primary teachers here, as a teacher of the Dhamma, committed to teaching the best I can to about the path of awakening and path to the end of suffering, the Buddha Dharma. And for me at times, well, more than at times, but only at times do I do it, I feel it's crucial to give talks and teachings about the role of the natural world in our practice in our life. And this is very important to me. It's important part of my practice. It's on my mind a lot, but it's especially on my mind because I'm going to be offering several nature retreats, and I've been thinking about those. And also, it's summertime, and people are often going off, taking time off, vacations, spending time outdoors in the mountains, in the ocean, in the forest. So this will be a talk to encourage you to take advantage of those opportunities as part of your practice. Fortunately, we live in an area where you can actually do that all year round pretty easily. And I moved here from New England. And wintertime, most people kind of hold up in their house with their wood stoves and so forth. But actually, it was the time of year where I was in the wilderness the most, in that I was a backcountry, cross-country skier, and so we would go up into the mountains in Vermont and into some wilderness areas, and which was very special. You know, the Buddha did not have meditation centers. Buddha did not even have monasteries. The Buddha didn't even rent, you know, halls to give talks in. For the 40-plus years that the Buddha taught after his awakening, he primarily moved around outdoors in encampments with other monks and practitioners. There's many stories about that and the places that he went you can visit today. I haven't done that, but I know there's people here who have. And to do that, he actually came up with a variety of some rules of how to, he didn't say it this way, but how to live lightly on the earth. And also the Buddha was born and had a profound childhood experience and was enlightened and died under a tree. And there's also many stories of where he taught under the shade of some great tree with his disciples and monks and students and lay people. So I often think of the Buddha as the tree teacher. And, you know, he awakened under the Bodhi tree. And recently we celebrated Vaisak, which is the Buddhist holiday of celebrating all of these events under a tree. And I think some people, I heard this, that some people from the San Francisco Zen Center are related to it. On the morning of Vaisak, they get up and meet before dawn under a tree to watch the morning star come up. And so I'm thinking in the future I'd like to do something like that here, or at least do something around Vaisak outdoors and with a tree. And you may know that in the Satipatthana Sutta, which is one of the basic collections of teachings of the Buddha, so it's usually translated the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, and it's something that we use a lot in this tradition. He says over and over again to go into the forest and sit at the root of a tree. To go into the forest and sit at the root of a tree. And a couple years ago, when I was going to be offering a nature retreat, I had made up a flyer and I gave it to Gilf Ronsdale to look over. I was curious what his view, his opinion would be, if he had any comments. And he's, some of you know, he's the guiding teacher at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, and he's also a Buddhist scholar. And I have to admit, I was a little nervous about how he might react to what I was doing, because it was unconventional by the normal Buddhist practices. You know, it's more like what we're doing here. And he said, he read it, and he said, well, you know, he said, it's good. There's only one thing I have a comment about. And I thought, oh, no, you know, what did I do? And he said, well, there's this line here where you say, meditation in the outdoors can be a wonderful addition to our regular practice. And he said, meditation outdoors is the original regular practice. It's not just an addition to it. So I like to think, in offering teachings about nature and also offering opportunities to actually go into nature and practice, is going back to the original way the Buddha taught. And you know, it was only later that monasteries, after the Buddha's death, the monasteries were developed and more organized structures, and you know, it just, as everything, like the Pasma Santa Cruz, everything gets bigger and more organized and more structured over time. And there actually were conflicts between the people who were sort of wanted the monasteries and the organization, and those who wanted to wander in the forest and be less structured. And the Thai forest tradition, which many of you may be familiar with, this tradition, a lot of what, and the teachers here, actually, more than some other Vipassana centers, are aligned with the Thai forest tradition. And where monks do practice in the forest and little huts and so forth. But that tradition is actually rather new. It kind of was resurrected in the late 19th century. So there's been a sort of resurgence in different ways of different practices related to nature in the forest. Certainly in Tibet, there's all the stories of yogis in the mountains, Milarepa, and different things. And then Zen has also always long been associated with nature and nature practice and nature metaphors in other traditions as well. So what I want to say tonight, there's so many things I can say, and I'm just picked out a few things, and we'll have a little bit of time to share and discuss, so you may have other questions or thoughts or challenges or something with it, and we can go there. What I'm going to propose, and this is from my background in psychology as well as my background as a Dharma teacher, is that much of our suffering and much of the disease we experience with ourselves and each other, and much of the, what I would call our unbalanced states, by that I mean those are modern human unbalanced states, which I have unbalanced states, and then next to it I wrote craziness. Much of our craziness, many of our health problems, our societal world problems, and certainly, obviously, our environmental problems, global warming, the various disasters we've had and disasters in the making, are in great part related to the degree of alienation and separation, I would say false alienation and separation and disconnection that we experience as modern Western, particularly modern Western developed human beings. So I see it both as a personal, psychological, societal, global, and spiritual issue. Chelis Glendening, who's written a great book called My Name is Chelis and I'm in Recovery from Western Civilization. I recommend the book. She talks, I actually have a copy here, brought it tonight. She talks a lot about how we've been separated. We're not really separated, of course, that's the whole point. But we experience and we create an illusion or delusion of separation for what she calls the primal matrix. Or that you might just say the web of life. And in Buddhist tradition, there's this metaphor of Indra's web, some of you may know. And in Indra's web, it's this idea of everything being connected to everything else, and any piece, very holistic and very much like a hologram, and at each sort of point in the web reflects every other part of the web. So there's these metaphors and this sort of this understanding, ancient and modern understanding of our great interconnectedness of what it really means to be alive and to be human. There's also been a movement. I called myself an eco-psychotherapist and an eco-psychologist when I was working as one, as a psychologist. And there's been a movement to create a category called nature deficit disorder. I don't think it's gotten into the DSM. People know what that, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. But there are serious attempts to actually name it as a disorder. And I think the disorder is so widespread that the powers that be don't actually see it as a disorder because they're too embedded in it. So it is my view that on our spiritual path, it's important to acknowledge this as part of our experience of disconnectedness, part of our sense of having this illusory, separate, alienated, isolated self. So it's not just isolated from other humans, which we often feel, but it's isolated from the whole web, the whole matrix, the whole of the universe. And so part of our practice is realizing this embeddedness and realizing in a very real and true and immediate way that we are of the earth, we're of the elements of the earth and of the sky and of the stars. Nothing separate, nothing different. And that to actually learn this and realize this is what I would call to restore and reveal our true nature. And our true nature is nature. So we tend to look to each other and we tend to spin out in our own heads a lot about, well, who am I, what am I, creating identities, creating self-images, getting all wound up and confused about that. And what I propose is that by a very clear re-engagement with the whole web of life and all of life, we will find out who we are. You know, many of us go into nature. I think probably most people here have some enjoyment in nature, probably varying degrees. You wouldn't probably be living in this area if you didn't, and you hopefully if you live in this area, you take advantage of it. The beaches and the mountains and the forests and everything else. But many of us tend to go out with nature as what I call a pleasant backdrop to our experience, to entertainment, to social activity, or it's like a nice place to be lost in our head and with our own thoughts and so forth, which can be okay, but I'm suggesting something else, that actually the opportunity to go into the natural world is an opportunity to have the nature of reality revealed. The nature of reality is being revealed right now, right here, in this room. It's not that it's out there, anywhere else, in nature. But if you going into nature is, I find, can help reveal the nature of reality in a way that's untainted and unconfused by the distractions and the delusions and the craziness. And the narcissism of humankind. And by doing that, the more you get clear on that, you can come back into this world, the world of people and modernism and all our technology, with a clear understanding of really of what is, a clear understanding of what's going on, a more heartfelt understanding, and not getting so caught up by the pressures, the crazy pressures of what's happening in the world. So learning to go into nature, what I say going into nature in a sacred way as opposed to an entertainment way. entertainment's okay too, but learning to teacher of mine called opening the sacred view. So I'm going to say a few things about how that happens or what that is or what nature offers us. Nature offers us the incredible invitation to slow down. And not just the invitation, but it's modeling it beautifully all the time. Go hang out with a redwood tree. I live in the redwoods. Hang out with a redwood tree. Hang out with a rock. Hang out with the ocean. You know, I was recently reminded of the Islamic saying, the soul travels at the speed of a camel. The soul travels at the speed of a camel, which is kind of a, you know, not too fast. And I would say the heart as well. So what I'm suggesting is we need to have the courage maybe, or the determination to slow down to the speed of life. Now our heart operates as well. The heart and our soul operates at the speed of life. It doesn't operate at the speed of electronics and cars and airplanes. And so we're suffering from that. Our heart and our soul is getting neglected. It's getting trampled over. It's getting ignored. We don't give it the space and the time and the natural process it needs to unfold, to be seen, to be heard, to be healed. And in order to truly love and really truly care about others, in order to truly pay attention, we need to slow down. And as I said, nature can teach us this beautifully. Teach us how we're supposed to be, in a sense, how we were built, how we evolved to live and to move and to breathe and to feel and to think. Animals can teach us this, different animals. Many of you may have had this experience. Many people love to just go camping, go somewhere and just sort of come to rest. The other thing about that nature invites us more profoundly, insists upon us actually, is to be present. And this is part of our practice. Is it not meditation, the practice of being present, the practice of being here, practice of being real, the practice of being connected, practice of being alive. So nature itself is not doing anything else. I think it may be, I don't know about whales and other higher primates, but it does seem that humans, the complication, the sophistication of the human mind is kind of unique in its ability to create the delusion of not being present. Because not being present is a delusion. We can never be anywhere but present. And nature knows this, or nature is that. And so we can be relieved of that delusion by being with nature. Nature relates to you right in the moment, right as you are. It doesn't care about your resume. It doesn't care about how nice or not nice your clothes are. It doesn't care what your retirement plans are or how much money you do or don't have in the bank. It doesn't care if you're wrinkled or what your weight is. It is a kind of infinitely non-judging environment, at least from the human realm. Some people sometimes think nature is indifferent. In my experience is not that. The nature is very alive and interested in you. It's not indifferent. But it is not judging or seeing you in the ways you normally do. It doesn't care what your self-image is. It doesn't care what your identity is. That's all made up in your mind. And when I was working as a therapist in Massachusetts, we would meet outside in nature in parks and hang out with trees. And I sort of guide them in an experience of being with beings that aren't judging you. Because some people feel so judged, so burdened by judgment, and so aware of what they think everyone else is thinking about them, to get them with beings that aren't thinking that and don't care about those things can be liberating. Another thing is, one way I put it is nature, you might say, I like to say it, the forest is always on retreat. I had this insight when I was helping teach a retreat that many of you have had the experience of joining a deep, silent retreat that's been going for a few days or a week. And if you walk into that retreat coming from the outside world, you suddenly, you settle. The energy, all the work the meditation people have done there, you just sort of, it just seeps in. And you can just join in. It's almost like cheating. You don't have to sit that first week. You just come in and you will feel the energy and you will kind of sink or deepen with where people are. And the way I like to think of it is nature or the forest has been on retreat for a few million years. And you can go out there and take advantage of that. You can sink and deepen with it in that way. I once wrote an article on eco-psychology called May the Forest Be With You. So you can sort of think of it that way. So this kind of presence, this being in nature, also helps us go beyond our story, our personal story, our human story, to let go of this. And the human race as a species has become incredibly narcissistic. It's like we just obsess on ourselves as a species. And we sort of forget that there's an entire world of other beings, whole complexes out there. When people talk about what's going on in the world and even disasters, it's all about the humans in it. And very little attention is given to all the other beings affected. And I've done some long solo retreats in nature, and I remember clearly on one solo, it was a month-long solo somewhere in the middle of it, kind of feeling this kind of humor, it just feeling very clearly the enormity of the universe and the smallness of the human species and just how much is going on out there. All these beings living their life, all these communities of different creatures, all this going on that we're ignoring and not in touch with. And it sort of helped me lighten the load of sort of the burden of being a human and giving me this feeling like I was connecting with all these other beings that live out entire lives oblivious to us. So there's a possibility. I also had this experience of feeling like I was joining, instead of being a visitor, I had joined a community of creatures. I was in this one spot for a month. And the creatures responded by no longer being afraid. Rabbits and deer and lizards and birds would be very friendly because you were now part of, and squirrels, I have squirrels sit on my leg, and all things happen. So they see you join their community. Another thing about being in nature is the lesson I would call the teachings of silence and stillness and spaciousness. Two summers ago, I guess it was, I did a two-week solo retreat just on a ridge in the Santa Cruz Mountains. And I just went out, it was on some friend's property, and I took a tent out and just spent a couple of weeks there. And when I got there, I remember that night, I said, boy, the silence is so loud. The silence is so loud, and it's so palpable, and it's so beautiful. That with practice and going in a sacred way, and when you still your mind, you begin to easily, I find, drop into the silence and the stillness and the spaciousness that are the qualities of our true nature. It's the silence and the stillness, spaciousness that goes beyond silence or sound, beyond movement or stillness. It's really the nature of who we are. You might say it's the nature of emptiness. Which is a teaching within Buddhism. And I would say you get to touch, it's easier, more direct, you can touch this profound emptiness which immediately when you touch it as a profound wholeness or completeness as well. Again, that's available right here and now. And yet I find that the teachings of it are so accessible in the natural world. There's teachings also of interconnectedness and interdependence, which are both principles of spirituality, Buddhism, and ecology. And from this teachings, the learning of interconnectedness and interdependence, of really experiencing it, that you're just made of dirt and stone and water just like everything else, and that we all depend on each other to be alive on this planet. It brings a lot of joy and love, natural, just joy and love. And people talk about this a lot. You just see your brotherhood with other animals. And with this joy and this love that comes from that also means that you have to have the courage. So love means you have to have the courage of the heart breaking, because the more of this love and joy that opens, the more your heart will break when you see things being harmed and destroyed. And maybe the last thing I want to talk about is, I suppose each of these could be a dharma, but this is very important to me, is what I would call reconnecting with the magic and mystery of life. Again, that's here right now. But I find that modern humans have really lost that connection with the magic and mystery, and that there is often a kind of, for me, a kind of scary dullness or lack of aliveness, or some spark has gone out. And spending time in the natural world for people who go in a sacred way gives you, again, it revives this wonderful sense of aliveness, of mystery, of magic, of wonder, of awe that is our birthright, is who we are and is really true of reality. I think that's why a lot of people are, you know, kids and adults are engaged with such things as Harry Potter, because the Harry Potter's world at Hogwarts represents the magic and the mystery. And then there's this other life in the city with the family, which represents kind of the drudgery and the dullness and the confusion and the craziness and the harshness of sometimes what our culture and life has become. And for me, it's actually very much like that. I mean, it's not like broomsticks and playing, what is it, Quidditch and so forth. But we can start to feel there's this, you can sort of leave behind the dullness and the oppression and really open up to something much more wondrous and mysterious. I ran into an old friend who I see periodically, and someone who's also done a lot of nature work, nature retreats, a lot. And he was actually, or still is, I suppose, a well-known, internationally known economist. He had a tenured seat at Stanford. He was in a think tank. And he basically dropped out of it all. And I ran into him, and he said, you know, it's hard living among the muggles. And we were laughing about that. And, you know, you will see just wondrous things of an ordinary, what I'd say, conventional reality. But if you spend a lot of time in nature, you'll start to have wondrous experience of a non-conventional reality. The world, natural world, if you honor it and go in a sacred way, will present you with little gifts. There's a famous line, I'm giving it briefly, from Ajahn Chah, the great Thai forest master, that goes something like, when the mind has become like a clear and still forest pool, you will see strange and wonderful things. And he's saying that as a metaphor, but my experience is you actually, it's literal as well. And I've had many experiences of seeing strange and wonderful things, which are many stories in themselves. So, the upshot of this is we are nature, we are part of nature, we've never been separate from nature. Everything we produce, our computers, our fighter jets, our bombs, are also part of nature, because we are nature. But what we're producing, what we're creating now, I feel is coming out of a mind that's been cut off, is out of balance, it's gotten crazy. And I sometimes think that in the future, if our human species survives, and if we actually get it together, and we become more balanced and healthy and understand what we're doing and change our ways, we'll look back on this era as many different things, but one is the era where we poisoned ourselves. Because we're poisoning ourselves in so many ways. We're poisoning the air and the earth and the water and our bodies through industrial food and everything else. So I'm hoping, I feel like that this is a time where we can turn it around for ourselves spiritually, turn it around for the world, turn it around for the planet. And this is what we're supposed to be learning as a species. We're supposed to be understanding this, the deeper understanding of who we are and our interconnectedness. So I'm going to stop there. And let's just spend a minute in silence, and then if there's questions or comments or sharings and about this, we can have a little bit of time for that.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.